Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. Tonight, a one-hour episode. First up, leading doctors react to the government's top epidemiologist, Dr. Jayaprakash Mulyale, who told us yesterday on this program that we'll all get Omicron, the boosters won't work, and that Omicron is basically a cold. In fact, the head of the government's COVID-19 task force, Dr. V.K. Paul, today in a press conference stated that Omicron is far from being a cold. So a rather public contradiction to what was stated yesterday. What's more, the government has made an important amendment in its testing protocol after having controversially stated that healthy contacts of COVID patients did not need to test themselves. Now the government says all contacts of COVID patients must quarantine for 7 days. That makes a lot of sense given the transmissibility of Omicron. Later on the program, no chief ministerial candidate yet for Congress, no chief ministerial candidate, no chief ministerial face ahead of the Punjab elections. And it already appears to be Channi versus Sidhu, with each leader making noises on the need for a face to be announced. But who's going to actually name that person, the centre, or is it going to be decided at the level of the state? But Channi's take and Sidhu's take on how this process needs to happen is diametrically different. Is this going to emerge as another problem for the Congress, which had faced one crisis after another in Punjab? But first, let's start with what Dr. Mulyale, the country's top government epidemiologist, told us yesterday as far as Omicron was concerned, where he said it was a cold, and what the head of the COVID-19 task force had to say today.
The issue is that the consequence of a viral infection is just like that of a cold.
Dr. Mulyale, did you just say that this is a disease which, Omicron, which presents itself just like the cold?
Absolutely.
Omicron is not common cold. Isi Omicron ki wajah se kai deshon ke health system collapse ho gaye.
All right, well, that was just one point. What we're going to be doing on this program, and we've got two wonderful guests, Dr. Rajesh Parekh, Director of Medical Research at Just Lok Hospital. We're also joined by Dr. Amrish Mithal, Chairman of Endocrinology and Diabetes at Max Healthcare. I'd like to thank you both very much for being with us. We're going to play out quote by quote, right, what was said yesterday by Dr. Jayaprakash Mulyale, and get you both to react. But first, let me go across to Dr. Parekh. Did you see the entire interview last night, sir? Because there were lots of points which were fairly controversial.
I did, Vishnu, and it was a struggle to sit through the entire interview. I was cringing at certain points, but I wanted to also hear what the policy decisions might be. So I did sit through it, and I must confess that I experienced a range of emotions, starting with amusement to begin with, but that soon turned into being puzzled, to astonishment, and then even being appalled. I mean, I saw a lot of what was being said at the intersection between nihilism and callousness. You know, there were two Venn diagrams. Most of the interview just fell in that. Of course, I did see you making a valiant yet polite effort to be rational, but there seemed to be a certain quality of tone deafness to the responses that were being put out to your questions.
So let's go point by point, and I'll get both your views on this, both the doctors on this program. Firstly, does Omicron present itself just like the cold? He told me yesterday, absolutely. Dr. Mithal, your response to that. Is this a common cold?
So Omicron can present like a common cold. Yes, it can start like that. And some patients may just have a common cold-like experience. But we are not seeing that in many patients. Patients get fever, they get severe headache, body ache. Some of them get severe throat pain, intractable throat pain. And many of them actually, whatever experience we have over the last couple of weeks, many of them are not okay in 2 days or 3 days. They take good 5 to 7 days to recover. So in terms of pure symptomatology, it at times can be like common cold, but it'll be, I don't think it'll be very smart to think of it as a common cold at all.
Dr. Parekh, should we think of this as a common cold?
Not in the least. I think it's a travesty and a trivialization of Omicron to compare it to the common cold. I'm glad Dr. Paul made that correction today, but exactly a week ago, on the 5th of January, the WHO warned that it should not be treated as a common cold. And if you look at the evidence, if you look at the genetic structure of the two viruses, the one that causes the common cold and the one that causes Omicron, there's only one point of insertion at 9 nucleotide level where there is something in common. The rest of it is different. Okay. Vishnu, 95% of our genome is common to that of the chimpanzee. The 5% does make a difference, I believe.
Next point that he mentioned when I asked him, is Omicron unstoppable? He said, and I quote, it's almost unstoppable because it is highly infectious. Most of us will not know we've been infected. Probably more than 80% will not even know. Dr. Rajesh Parikh, is this unstoppable?
Well, not exactly. I do concede that there may be a grain of truth in what he's saying. But, you know, what is appalling is therefore the conclusion that one derives from it. I mean, take, for instance, in October, November of 1962, the Chinese army seemed unstoppable as it came over the border across to us. But valiant soldiers fought, died for our freedom. We didn't put our hands up and say that this is unstoppable. At this point, Vishnu, this particularly affects me because more than 500,000 frontline workers have been infected. Several thousand have died. People from your own profession have been infected and have died.
Yes.
So to say that it is unstoppable, you may have a grain of truth in it. But I think what you derive from that therefore you don't need vaccines, boosters, which perhaps you'll come to later, didn't make any sense to me at all.
The other, you know, the second part of this, which Dr. Mittal, I'd like you to take on, is he says that probably more than 80% will not even know. Now, you know, I've always been a little confused about asymptomatic cases because, again, on the basis of covering this now for 2 odd years, there are very few people who are 100% asymptomatic. There is always a small manifestation of a symptom. You could have the sniffles. You can ignore it, but that is still a symptom. Therefore, if there is a perspective from the government, right, because he represents the government, that more than 80% will not even know, isn't that number catastrophically high?
I think the 80% figure is fairly arbitrary. Although, Vishnu, it is true that people who have viral fevers, viral infections like SARS-CoV-2, like the Delta variant also, many of them were picked up only later on seropositivity studies as evidence that they had had the infection. And they didn't really get any significant symptoms. So it is possible that a significant proportion of people will not know they have been infected, especially the younger, healthier people who may have absolutely no or trivial symptoms, as you say. But it is possible in science to have large chunk of people. But 80%, I don't know where the figure came from. I think that's just a way of expressing that a majority may not know that they have been infected. See, the important point here, and I'll quickly make a point, is that
yes.
You were talking of common cold and you were talking of not knowing, and maybe you'll come to this later. The gravity of the disease of Omicron can be seen by today's Delhi statistics. And if you want, we can discuss that now.
No, we've got the numbers. Hang on a second, doctor. I'm pulling up the numbers. Let's talk about them. Let's pull up those Delhi numbers today, because if you've got 40 deaths, which have been reported,
40 deaths.
Yes, that's right. We'll pull that number up because I have a date of when it's the highest number since.
Yes, yes.
We cannot be trivializing this, right?
No.
No, not this. Let's pick up the data as far as Delhi deaths is concerned. We're just trying to get that. Delhi's third wave.
600 people in the ICU.
40 people have died.
And 40 have died today.
Right. It's not trivial. It's not we'll get that graphic sooner than later. Dr. Mittal, go ahead with the point you're making.
So the point I'm making is that what the South African data showed is that Delta may be 4 to 5 times more infectious than, Omicron may be 4 to 5 times more infectious than Delta. And the disease may be less severe in Omicron. We all agree on that. There's no question. But the sheer numbers will fill up our ICUs and fill up our beds sooner rather than later. And one has to be prepared for that. So 618 people in the ICU in Delhi today, if I'm not wrong, and 40 deaths. So, and look at the deaths for the whole month of December.
No, I'm going to talk about these numbers a little bit more because let's have that up full frame. Let's have this graphic up full frame.
Yes.
Delhi's
yes.
third wave cases are still rising. It's up to 40 deaths today. So that's not a small number. In fact, if you look at the last 2 weeks, this is something which is true in a lot of states. West Bengal deaths in the last 2 weeks of COVID have been 203, but in the 2 weeks prior to that have been 113. So that's been going up. Maharashtra has gone up as well. Tamil Nadu has gone up. Delhi has gone up. Delhi in the last 2 weeks, 93 deaths. In the previous 2 weeks, 7 deaths. Right? Chattisgarh, deaths
and,
in the
and
last
nothing.
2 weeks,
and,
23.
And no deaths.
In the previous 2 weeks, 6. So, oh, sorry, we've got the numbers, you know, and, you know, this is the number of cases. So that's a different number. But your point is very well taken, sir. It's not that people aren't dying. They are dying. The numbers might still be small, but there are sick people who are dying. Go ahead. Doctor, with your point before I go across to Dr. Parikh. Yes.
No, what I was trying to say is that the sheer numbers, the sheer infectivity of the virus is such that it's infecting a very large number of people. And even if a small proportion of them are requiring ICU care, oxygen care, and deaths are happening. And you can see that trajectory. Look at the data for December. I don't think we had more than, most days we had zero deaths.
Right.
Okay, so
exactly.
So you suddenly have reached
yeah.
this state.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously something is happening. We can't be stupid and shut our eyes to this, you know. So quite clearly, we need to do whatever we can to contain it. If we take the other extreme view that it doesn't matter, it's a common cold, everyone's going to get it. I mean, you might as well stop wearing masks. I mean, why observe any precautions anyway?
Exactly.
I mean, that's kind of an extreme view that I'll not subscribe to at all.
Dr. Parikh, the next point that he mentioned yesterday, I asked him, rather in a rather exasperated manner, because I didn't understand what he was saying. I said, will we all therefore get Omicron, doctor? Is that what you're trying to say? To which he said, that is correct. We'll all get Omicron. And let me say his exact words. That is correct. It's so infectious, much more infectious than Delta. That is, of course, correct. It is way more transmissible. But do you accept that we'll all get it, Dr. Parikh?
What do I say, Vishnu? It's such a rhetorical and obvious question. We're all going to die anyway. Does that mean that we lead a reckless life? And just a minor thing about this thing that it's possible. Well, in medicine, everything is possible. A malignant lung cancer, it's possible. It may present as a cough. But are we going to equate the two because there is some overlap in the symptomatology? So it's quite clear. And I could see that exasperation on your face yesterday as you kept trying to negotiate your way in a very polite and civil manner as a good host. Should.
Don't think any of us have any desire of getting Omicron. Those of us lucky enough not to have had COVID so far, we try and fight to ensure that we stay free.
Oh,
in fact, at this
absolutely.
Point, both doctors, let me tell you something. A lot of people wonder whether there's a double standard in a news anchor like me right now talking to you about COVID and not having a mask on. There is nobody within 35 feet of me in any direction right now, right? That's a basic precaution that we take to ensure that, and it's a huge sort of room that I'm in right now. It's massive. And we've done this for 2 years. Within 35 feet of me, at least, it could be 40 feet, there is not a single person. So we try and protect ourselves. So no double standards in this entire thing. But let me move on to my next question. Should we be changing our policy on testing is what I asked him yesterday. He said, we have learned to live with it. Even when Delta was around, we always multiply the number of cases picked up by about 30 to get to the real number. This particular one, we just increased 30 to probably 60. So, Dr. Mithal, would you like to take this on? We've changed our policy of testing. And is it enough to say that, you know, it's okay if we have, because we'll never get the real number. The real number is 60 times what is being reported now. But that may be true, by the way. That may be true. And I think it's important to stress that. But I'm just asking or wanting to know, does that mean we change testing? Because testing gives us numbers besides anything else.
So I think we need to understand where that 30 and 60 is coming from, you know. So why 60? I mean, why not 600?
He said 60 to 90 later on.
I know, I know. Yes. So what I'm saying is that these are sort of arbitrary, relatively arbitrary statements to my mind. But what probably he wants to say is that, yeah, we'll have more undetected cases in this because of the severity of symptoms being much less than Delta. Probably that's the one line that was tried to be communicated. The policy on testing is necessitated by probably the increasing demand and spread, and the fact that as the government promises that everyone who has been in contact with anyone who's positive should get a test, it probably increases the load on the system to a point where they see it cannot be managed.
So, and there was an amendment today, which was so good.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a great amendment. It makes so much sense. If you are a contact of somebody who's COVID positive, be in home quarantine for a week. It makes perfect sense. It also benefits a system where you say that, look, we can't just test immediately because we've limited infrastructure. All right. Quarantine yourself. If you fall sick, then test. So it works both ways. We should have had this a couple of days back. I think it makes so much sense.
I completely agree with the amendment. And I think that's a very important step taken. Yeah. Otherwise, you would just be let loose like that, which is what I was going to say. That in case you can't test, you can quarantine. And now it's come as a guideline. The other thing you can do is, if you don't want to strain the government system, the rapid antigen home testing has taken off in a big way. We are getting fairly good results. The specificity of the test, which means that the chances of being positive, if the test is positive, are close to 100%.
So that's
you will
great.
Still miss patients.
Which
you
is a big change from what it was.
So you can do it. You know, like if you feel that you've been exposed, it costs 200, 300 rupees. Go and get that and get that test done. So at least as an individual, you can be responsible and make sure that people around you are not affected.
Next question. Dr. Parikh, I asked Dr. Mulyal yesterday, do boosters play a key role in fighting Omicron? He said, and I quote, a philosophy the world over that natural infection doesn't impart any lasting immunity. Now, that is a philosophy which I think is wrong. That was his answer.
Well, yes, I'll come to that, Vishnu. But if I may, I'd just like to give a simple analogy which will clear up this whole issue of testing. You know, I told you I went at a certain point from being astonished to being appalled, and that was the point of testing, because, you know, I think he went a step beyond. He says, you know, we've learned from the first time around that testing really didn't make any difference to the spread of the pandemic. And that's what I believe I heard him say. And, you know, we all know that what went wrong the first time, it was too little, too late in the testing. Now, the analogy that comes to my mind is if you're driving and you press on the pedal a bit too late and a bit too little, and you head into a crash which kills a lot of people, I think to draw the conclusion that brakes are not necessary because, you know, they didn't work this time. You know, there are several other conclusions you need to examine, including the fact whether it was too little, too late that led to the disaster, or whether it was just having brakes in the first place. So I think that should answer this issue of testing. About the booster dose, what can I say? I mean, you can put philosophy aside. We're all entitled, of course, to our personal philosophies, but the data is loud and clear. It's there across the world. And, you know, I think it's beneath to even try to attempt to answer that question. We have to look at the data. Boosters work. And that's why boosters have been introduced in our country. So if they don't work, why did we introduce them in the first place?
Okay. Now, he also said, and I mean, I asked him this question, were most Indians infected before their first vaccine? I quizzed him on this because he'd said it. And he said, in fact, let me, because I need to be accurate about this, we spoke yesterday about Indians being infected earlier on. And his answer was, and I quote, in India, more than 85% got infected before the vaccine arrived. So the first dose of vaccine most people received, whether they knew they had an infection or not, was a booster dose. What I don't understand is this, Dr. Mittal. How did we know that 85% of Indians did actually get COVID prior to getting their first dose? Because the seropositivity studies happen afterwards.
Yeah, they certainly were not in the range of 85% at that point. And that answers the earlier question itself. If 85% were seropositive and they had had the infection because of the first wave, during the first wave, then why was the Delta wave so devastating? If natural immunity was so good, plus you got one shot, You got a booster, according to some. So if you got a booster and you had natural immunity, 85% were infected, and yet you had that devastation of April and May. I mean, there's something wrong. No, both can't be right.
I actually think, and Dr. Parikh, I'll get your views on this, that statement that 85% of Indians had actually tested positive before the vaccines were rolled out is a glaring indictment of the rollout of vaccines the first time around. Because the fact is, we did not roll out vaccines for a large population of ours early enough. When we realized people were dying of Delta, we stopped exports, rolled them out into the country. But today you've actually got the government stop epidemiologist making this remark. It seems to suggest that what a lot of people have said earlier on as well, that we've never rolled the vaccines out fast enough. How many people lost their lives because of that?
Vishnu, it's appalling from several points of view. You've given one kind of prismatic view of it. Let me give you another one. It's an absolute contradiction of ICMR's own data. ICMR's data, first of all, indicates that in the sero survey, the immunity was not distributed evenly. They stated in so many words that it was not geographically even. It was higher in the cities. It was higher in some clusters. It was uneven geographically, but it was also uneven demographically. ICMR's own data shows that children had lower seropositivity than adults. Therefore, as a corollary to the argument, they do become indeed more vulnerable. That's another issue altogether. And if I remember right, the ICMR data at that point talked of 67%. But a very uneven distribution geographically and demographically. So where this magical number of 85 evenly across the country was conjured from is something that I find hard to understand.
All right. Well, I think...
Well, also, Vishnu, in that case, I mean, not only the Delta, why then we're getting this Omicron surge? If 85% already had positivity and then we've rolled out the vaccine, I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up at all.
To be the devil's advocate, because it's a completely different beast, Dr. Mitra.
I hope that there's no pun intended in that, Vishnu.
Look, I'd like to thank you both very much for joining us. And I think we'll have you back again when we need to talk more seriously about boosters for a large number of people, whoever is eligible. World over, after 6 months of the second dose, you get a booster. We can debate which booster is best. And that's a really healthy, important scientific debate to have. But to stretch it to 9 months, that too only for frontline workers, and those with comorbidities above the age of 60, a lot of people suggest is a big risk. In a country like ours, how do you know that people between 40 and 60 don't have comorbidities? I mean, both of you are doctors. You treat patients in this age group with comorbidities. It's a sad reality around the world, certainly in India. We'll talk about boosters later. I'm out of time. I've got a couple of views coming in on this program on Koo. Navdeep says booster vaccine doses won't stop the rapid spread of the virus. It has occurred all over the world, regardless of this. Very true. It is a perspective. We'd like to suggest that boosters stop the progression of this illness to serious illness and hospitalization and possibly death, which is why never discount the booster or the vaccines. It saves lives. Aman writes, he says, the majority of us will not know we've been infected. Probably more than 80% will not even know when we have it. That's a debatable standpoint, but yes, it is something which has been stated. Well, we're going to take a short break. There's a lot more which is coming up on this program, including the Punjab crisis, the latest one in the making for the Congress party, who's going to be their chief ministerial base. Welcome back. You're watching Left, Right and Centre. No chief ministerial candidate yet for the Congress ahead of the Punjab elections. And it already appears to be Channi versus Sidhu, with each leader making noises on the need for a face. But their take on this is diametrically different, as you may expect. Is this going to emerge as another problem for the Congress, which has faced one crisis after another in Punjab? Let's listen into what both leaders have had to say.
Oh, bhai, CM banao Punjab de log. Tenu kine kehta mitra? ये हाई कमांड बनाऊगी सीएम हू टोल्ड यू लिसन टू मी पंजाब दे लोका ने पंजाब दे लोका ने एमएलए भी 5 साल पहला बनाए सी एमएलए बन गए या नहीं ये पंजाब दे लोका ने डिसाइड करना है
ਸਿੱਧੂ ਇਹੀ ਕਹਿ ਰਿਹਾ ਕਿ ਕੈਂਡੀਡੇਟ ਦੇ ਦੋ। ਪਿਛਲੀ ਵਾਰੀ ਕੈਪਟਨ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਜਿੱਤ ਗਏ ਸੀ, ਉਸ ਤੋਂ ਪਿਛਲੀ ਵਾਰੀ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਤਾਂ ਹਾਰ ਗਏ, ਉਸ ਤੋਂ ਪਿਛਲੀ ਵਾਰੀ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਸੀ ਜਿੱਤ ਗਏ ਸੀ, ਉਸ ਤੋਂ ਪਿਛਲੀ ਵਾਰੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਹਾਰ ਗਏ ਸੀ, ਐਤਕੀ ਦੇ ਦੇਣਾ ਚਾਹੀਦਾ।
All right, well, joining us now, Charan Singh Sapra of the Congress Party, Smita Prakash, the editor of ANI, joins us, as does Manjeet Rai of the BJP. Thank you both very much for being with us. Mr. Sapra, let me come to you first. Now, yesterday, Charanjit Singh Channi said something interesting. He said, and I quote, "Whenever the party has not announced the chief ministerial candidate, it has lost. So why isn't the Congress, therefore, announcing your chief ministerial face?"
See, Vishnu, let me remind you that no party in Punjab as yet has announced a chief ministerial candidate, whether it is BJP or Akali Dal or Aam Aadmi Party or any other party also. I feel there is still time, and probably at the appropriate time the decision will be taken. And I don't think so that this is going to be a bigger issue in the Punjab election. Congress party, all the leaders will work with absolute synergy, and
but they aren't really doing that, are they? Because, you know, you've got Mr. Channi making these remarks. Whenever the party has not announced CM candidate, it has lost. He's focused on the CM candidate name, and yesterday Navjot Singh Sidhu said it will not be the leadership of your party. Instead, it's going to be people in Punjab who are going to decide. This has become an issue, sir. Whether your party has announced it or not, both leaders are talking about it.
No, these are the independent views of both the leaders. There is a democracy.
So what is the synergy that you're talking about? I understand these are their individual views, but if you're talking about synergy, then shouldn't both of them say that our party high command will decide at the right time, and that I am not necessarily the right choice of chief minister, it depends on the party? Because that's typically what one hears.
Vishnu, the synergy is that the Chief Minister Charanjit Singh Channi is absolutely working for the people. Right. Since last 3 months, we have been watching the way he has been taking decisions for the people of Punjab, whether it is reducing the electricity bills or waiving off the earlier electricity bills of the farmers, or giving 11% DNS allowance to the government.
And Mr. Sidhu is working for the party as well, or is he working for himself and his hope to become Chief Minister?
No, that's fine. Everybody has an aspiration to become the chief minister. But what I'm trying to say that the Congress party in Punjab is working with absolute synergy. The chief minister is doing his job. The party president, Navjot Singh Sidhu, he is designated with a particular job to strengthen the party, which he is doing at his level.
Okay.
The chairman of the this Prachar Samiti, Mr. Jakhar, he's doing his job, so everybody is on
all right.
The
everybody
job.
Is doing their job, but let me place this question to Raghav Chadda as well of the Aam Aadmi Party, who's also with us. Raghav, why hasn't the Aam Aadmi Party announced a chief ministerial face? Surely that's something important, given that personalities have such an impact in our elections.
No, of course, Vishnu, it is certainly important. I can hear my echo. If you could kindly get that corrected,
we'll fix it.
Right. So, of course, the announcement is very, very critical. But what is even more critical is the timing of the announcement. So this very morning, when the Honorable Chief Minister visited the capital of Punjab, Chandigarh, from where I am doing this live with you, he spoke to the media, he briefed the media, and he said that within a span of one week, we are going to announce Aam Aadmi Party's chief ministerial candidate. And
so
very soon,
who could the potential candidates be? In the Congress, we know the two faces who could be, most likely. In your party, who could it be? Am I looking at one of them, for example?
No, you are certainly not looking at one of them. This will have. I am not willing to dive deep into this process of elimination. It is for my party to decide, and we will very soon announce one.
Right.
I can certainly tell you that the only party that I feel that is going to announce a chief ministerial face, a chief ministerial candidate in the 2022 Punjab elections is going to be the Aam Aadmi Party. Shiromani Akali Dal has not announced one. Congress doesn't seem to be in any state to take a call, to take a decision on this particular issue. So I think the only party
that's
going
actually
to announce
quite interesting.
Is the Aam Aadmi Party.
Manjeet Raiji, would you agree that your party is not going to be announcing a chief ministerial face anytime early? That you're going to fight these elections as in other states on the face of Narendra Modi? Is that your party strategy?
Yes, of course. विष्णु जी ऐसे है कि हमारी पार्टी का सिस्टम तो ऐसा रहता है कि हम कहीं अनाउंस करते हैं कहीं नहीं करते हैं, और पंजाब में भी अभी हम ऐसा कोई कैंडिडेट सीएम फेस अनाउंस करने वाले नहीं है। तो बाकी मैं कांग्रेस पार्टी के बारे में कहना चाहता हूं कि वो उनके जो ओवर एम्बिशियस हैं वो विधायक या दूसरी इलेक्शन लड़ने के बजाय सिद्धू और उनके मन की महत्व आकांक्षा है कि वो हर समय सीएमशिप कहते रहते हैं। पहले उन्होंने कैप्टन अमरिंदर सिंह को निकालने का हाईकमांड को बोल के निकालने का काम किया कि शायद मेरा दाव लग जाए सीएम बन जाऊं
जी।
वो ऐसे अब चन्नी है ना, वो आपस में कह रहे हैं, वो कुछ कह रहे हैं,
right. तो मतलब पर्सनल एम्बिशन के लिए लीडरशिप का सवाल कांग्रेस पार्टी के लिए सेंट्रल है। स्मिता, लेट मी आस्क यू दिस, मनीष तिवारी मेड एन इंटरेस्टिंग ट्वीट टुडे, ही सेज एंड आई क्वोट, पंजाब नीड सीरियस पीपल हुज पॉलिटिक्स आर नॉट सोशल इंजीनियरिंग एंटरटेनमेंट फ्रीबीज एंड नॉट रेजिम फेवरेट्स रिजेक्टेड बाय पीपल इन सक्सेसिव इलेक्शंस। हाउ डज दिस हेल्प द कॉज ऑफ द कांग्रेस विच एवर साइड दैट ही मे सपोर्ट, विच इज इन मच ऑफ अ सरप्राइज ऑफ कोर्स।
Yeah, I really don't know which way Manish Tiwari is hinting, but looking at Raghav Chadha grinning from year to year, I think the only party looking confident of winning seems to be the Aam Aadmi Party. The Congress looks like a house divided, as you pointed out. The Akalis look helpless and have no steam. The BJP is not really a player, and they're pretending to be one via Captain Amrinder Singh or Manish Tiwari's tweets. I think Captain Amrinder Singh left it till too late to chart out a new path. But I think the unsightly drama that one is seeing, which you refer to, between Chief Minister Channi and Navjot Sidhu, it's confusing the electorate, because Sidhu rolls out this Punjab model and yes, there's no sign of Channi or Jhakar present, and the banner at the back just has Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi and Priyanka Gandhi and Sidhu himself. And it seems very clear, because of these bombastic statements that Mr. Sidhu is making, that he will brook nobody other than himself as chief minister. And will the Congress party now risk setting aside a Dalit chief minister? Because, you know, you might turn around and say that, oh, he's a nice guy and he's delivered in those few months, given a kind of stability to the party. But the fact is that, you know, he will look like a night watchman who you've got rid of in the event of Congress party winning. So the past 6 months of, you know, this farmers drama and things like that happened, farmers agitation, which the Congress tried to front it,
yes,
with Rahul Gandhi climbing onto the tractor and things, and Amrinder Singh asking the farmers to move from Punjab and do the demo on the borders. So it looked like Congress party was going to reap the political benefits of this farmers agitation, but that didn't happen. They lost focus. They were taking on the BJP. But what actually happened was Aam Aadmi Party sitting on the sides has reaped the political benefits, sure, of this farmers' agitation.
Mr. Sapra, isn't it strange that Navjot Sidhu would launch a Punjab model even before the Congress Party announces its election manifesto?
No, see, I don't think so. There's a manifesto committee under Mr. Pratap Bajwa, and they all are figuring out the major pointers in that, and probably it will be announced soon. And as far as Smita Prakashji was talking about Aam Aadmi Party, let me also remind you that in the last election, Aam Aadmi Party, you know, they had a slogan, Ki Sara Punjab Kejriwal De Naal. And what happened? Only 20 seats. And out of those 20 seats, also 5, you know, they shifted towards Congress party. They could not hold their flock together. And the freebies, the kind of freebies which Kejriwal is announcing, that's like a hollow bamboo. Like, you know, bahar se majboot aur andar se khokhla.
No, but Mr. Sapra, do you not see the Aam Aadmi Party as your main challenge in Punjab?
No. We don't think so. It's going to the same
scenario. So you see the BJP Shiromani Akali Dal as your primary challenge? That's an important statement, sir. Is that true?
Let me complete it. Same
may
scenario
I, Vishnu, may I
repeat it? You know why? Because Kejriwal, who says that he will expose Akali Dal, He is an apologist. He has apologized to Vikram Majithia. So, an apologist, a proven liar, cannot find trust in people of Punjab.
Okay,
now.
No, I'm just asking you who you see as your... Who does the Congress see as its major rival or challenge in Punjab? Is it the Aam Aadmi Party or is it the BJP SAD?
Let's see, the time
it's
will
the
tell.
Congress itself.
Our job, our government, our leaders have worked for the people of Punjab.
You aren't answering that question, sir.
Promises which were given to the Punjab. And now the election strategy...
I'd like to take that.
Okay, Raghav, go ahead. You respond to that.
May I answer that for my colleague from the Congress? The Congress party's principal challenger is Congress itself. They have no Aam Aadmi Party doesn't pose a challenge to them. It's the Congress party in Punjab that poses a challenge to the Congress party in Punjab. You need to understand, Congress in Punjab is essentially a fight club where this very ugly WrestleMania is going on. Charanjit Singh Channi fights with Sukhi Randhawa. Sukhi Randhawa fights with Bharat Bhushan Ashu. Bharat Bhushan Ashu fights with Manpreet Badal. Manpreet Badal fights with Raja Waring. Raja Waring fights with Manish Tiwari. Manish Tiwari fights with Pratap Bajwa. Pratap Bajwa fights with OP Saini. OP Saini fights with Navjot Singh Sidhu. And Navjot Singh Sidhu literally fights with everyone. So essentially, it's a WrestleMania.
Charanjit ji, I'll just come to you next.
And therefore, Congress is its own challenger. And I don't
Charanjit
know how... The
Singh ji, you know, I mean, what he's saying is right. I mean, from what we are told, everyone's fighting with everybody. All of those equations are so strained. So is your worst enemy in Punjab the Congress party itself?
No, he should also, when he's pointing a finger towards Congress, there are three fingers pointing towards himself also. He needs to remember that his three member parliaments, they fought with Kejriwal and they left.
Half a second, Raghav.
See,
go ahead, Mr. Sapra. Yeah.
Where is Gurwant Mann going to go?
All right, Raghav, go ahead.
No,
respond.
Right. So, well, I certainly accept this criticism, Vishnu, that yes, a handful of our MLAs are defected. I accept. That's fine. They may have defected for various reasons. One of the major reasons was that they were not being repeated in the year 2022. But the Congress party... It's a bit rich coming from the Congress party. The Congress party's own chief minister defected. The captain of the ship defected and formed his own outfit. So the Congress party is, of course, in a state of disarray. And they certainly do pose a challenge. The fact is, Vishnu, and I've been touring the state for almost 1 year now, people of Punjab are yearning for change. Since the year 1966,
all right, people of Punjab are yearning for change. I'm running short on time over here. I want to go across to Smita Prakash for one final question. When it comes to Navjot Singh Sidhu, it's almost as if in his own mind, it's a done deal as far as he is concerned. He is the chief ministerial candidate. Is that based on certain assurances which have been given to him?
Well, it could be, yes, Vishnu. He knows what his conversations with the Gandhi family have been. But it's also, I think, he keeps thinking that, you know, if he believes in something strong enough, that is going to come true. But with Mr. Sapra pointing out about the earlier elections, Vishnu, it is true that most of us who toured in 2017 really felt that, you know, what Raghav is saying today, that Punjab is yearning for a change, that there were many parts of Punjab which were talking about wanting a change. But surprisingly, when it actually came to vote, people who thought that the Shiromani Akali Dal will not do all that well did extremely well, much more than that. In fact, in Sukhbir Singh Badal's constituency, his office also hadn't opened till 2 days before, and there was in that backdrop of that demonetization fiasco that the elections were taking place. So, you know, totally unpredictable result came out. So today when Aam Aadmi Party says that people are yearning for a change, yes, the opinion polls do seem to indicate that people are yearning for a change. But then Sidhu seems so confident. So one really wonders if that confidence is all that empty content. It is possible that the Congress has something up its sleeve.
All right, but we'll see what finally happens. I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us.